ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाक चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Shonakadi Vishnu had asked Sudha Goswami about the intrinsic nature of dharma. Generally, dharma is translated as religion. Here, Prabhupada is given the translation as the occupation, and that explains. The root meaning of the word dharma is that which sustains one's existence. Dhrit, dharyate, that which holds, just like dharan. Dharana Shakti means the ability to hold information, memory. So that which holds, that which sustains, that which supports, what is the essence of our existence? Srila Prabhupada many times explained that the essence of our existence, or the intrinsic activity of every living being, is to serve. But where should that service be placed? So that we can be completely satisfied. You see, it is our nature to serve. And we hope that by serving, we will become satisfied. Everyone is serving. The tendency is there to serve. We serve our friends, our family members, our country. Even the head of the state is a servant of the state. We need more so than others, just like the Queen of England. She always has to be very conscious that she's representing England, and she has to act in such a way to maintain the supposed dignity of the state. So she's also a public servant. So everyone is serving someone else. Why? Because there's some pleasure in it. Prabhupada noted that, you see, nowadays in the modern age where life is very strange and unnatural, many people live alone. They'll be living in an apartment building with 200 other apartments, but they'll be alone and they won't even know the names of the other people in the apartment. So they have no friends. So they keep a cat or a dog or a budgerigar to be their friend and serve. Prabhupada noted, he saw when he went to America that the man is taking the dog for a walk on the lead, and when the dog wants to stop to pass during a stool, the man will stop on it. So the dog is being served by the man, he's become a servant of his dog, because he has the desire to serve. So Prabhupada said that we just have to change this propensity from serving dog to serving dog. Then you'll be satisfied. Because if you serve a dog, then you'll become a dog. Yanyam rapi sran bhavam tejyam prila kaliradam kankamai vaiti kankaya sadata bhava bhavita. That which you think of at the time of death, that will make your next life. We actually see, sometimes they make cartoons in the Western countries, of people, of someone walking and with their dog, and the man's face is exactly like them. And or a horse, someone who is addicted to horse riding. That actually, you can see, I've personally witnessed this, you can see how, even that, because the physical body is based on the subtle body. So if you become in horse consciousness, you look like a horse. And you're getting ready to become, just like you see everywhere, this KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, with a picture of Colonel Sanders. Did it ever strike you that he looks exactly like a chicken? Because he has to become millions and millions of times a chicken and be slaughtered. Now they're eating Kentucky Fried Chicken, Colonel Sanders. They don't know that they're eating Colonel Sanders. Maybe. And he himself is in the shop being roasted. His body. The people don't know these things. Therefore, the sages of Nanyasharanya, they have asked, what is the supreme occupational duty? Everyone is doing something. Nahi kastit janamati jati tishchatikama. Krishna says to people, you have to do something. You can't not do anything. Everyone has to do something. Even if you think, I will go to the forest and do nothing. I will simply sit in the forest and meditate. Or if you think, I will sit at home and do nothing. In some countries they have this system, dole, they call it the dole. You don't do any work, and you simply go to the government, and they give you some money. But even then you have to do something. You have to breathe, that's also doing something. Every time you breathe, and different living entities are being killed by your breathing, microbes. everything you have to eat. So that's also some activity. Then you become responsible to others, because the food is provided by the labor of others. And the food is the body of others. Jiho, jiho, jiho. Every living being lives by eating the bodies of other living beings. Even the vegetarian. And we eat the rice grains is the form of the body of a living being, extracted from the form of the body of a living being. So then you become indebted to that jiva in that body. So everyone has a responsibility to act. You have to repay that debt. That's why in the Vedic culture there are different kinds of yajnas. Pitra yajna, deva yajna, bhuta yajna, mri yajna. The different kinds of sacrifices which are supposed to satisfy the devas, the forefathers, living beings in general, mankind, relatives. There are different kinds of yajna. This all constitutes dharma. These are religious activities, occupational duties that one should perform so that he can become free from his debt to others and progress towards a higher status of life. Now Krishna says in Gita, Savadhaman Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Gita is a book of dharma. But at the end Krishna says to give up all dharma. So what is that? That means he's bringing us to the highest level of dharma, which is to surrender to him. That means he's bringing us to dharma is that which sustains one's existence. So that which sustains one's existence on the material platform is called materialistic dharma. That which elevates us to higher planets, protects us from falling down, which discharges our responsibilities to others. This is called moral behavior. You'll find in the Vedic literature there is discussion of Stri Dharma, Raja Dharma, Brahma Dharma, Kshatriya Dharma. For the different orders of life, the people in different statuses of life, there are different activities prescribed. And then there are rules and regulations for going to holy places, there's deity worship, special festivals, so many different points are outlined for materialistic dharma, which sustained our position. In other words, that we don't fall down too far. Otherwise, human life without dharma, without religious activities, is only animal life. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending, the animals do. The humans also do. So the special facility of human life is to practice dharma, regulated activities. The animals do not regulate their activities. They simply, they live according to this idea, if it feels good, do it. This is a kind of hippie philosophy. If it feels good, do it. If you want to do it, do it. That's animal philosophy. The human being must discriminate. Is this action beneficial to others? Now how to judge that? There are different opinions about what is good and what is not good. For instance, there is a big question about proportion. Is it proper or is it not? So some people are saying that, well, women should have the right to do their own body. They should be allowed to do what they like with it. And then the argument comes that, well, you know, we didn't really mean to get pregnant, it was just a mistake. And, I don't really want the child, so it's better that it's abort the embryo in the womb. Because I don't want I won't look after the child properly anyway. But so better to kill him now. That's better for the child. These kind of arguments come. So there are different standards of morality according to different people's opinion. Therefore the Vedic literature is the absolute standard. But no, you cannot abort the child because you had the sex life, now you have to take the responsibility for that. You say it's your body, but anyway the body that you have is not given by you, it's given by material nature under the direction of God. And that the body which is forming with your womb is someone else's body. So the laws, how to live, Discrimination is there, but that must be based upon the bias given by God. That is dharma. Otherwise, we don't know what is proper behavior or what is not. But if we don't discriminate at all, if we don't follow the laws of dharma, then we're simply living an animal existence. An animal is thinking, what is good for my sense gratification? And human, if we think in the same way, that it's my body, I'll do whatever I like with it, and it's better for the child if I kill him now. Such arguments come up because people have no fixed standard of knowledge. Therefore, the Vedic literatures are there. And if they're followed, then that restricts that brings us above animal life. If we don't follow them, then we're simply on the platform of animals, and so on. However, simply following these rules and regulations of moral life as given in the Vedic literature did not constitute the essence of dharma. We'll find in the Gita the term is used swadharma. Swadharma nitanam shaya, Krishna says. It's better to perform your own duty. Paradharma bhayabaha. It is fearful to do someone else's dharma. Now, this refers to swadharma, one's own duty. On the material platform, in civilized society, everyone is designated as Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or even lower. Designations are there. According to the status you have acquired due to your association with the laws of material nature, then you should be designated as Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Vyasta, Brahmachari, Sannyas. This is not meant for putting down the lower caste, but so that anyone can act according to their particular status. In other words, if someone has the nature to assist others in activities or to perform, to be an artisan, to do craftsmanship, this kind of thing, then it's better for him to be understood. His shudra should be treated as such. He doesn't have the highly developed powers of discrimination. So he should be guided by those who have. But if we say everyone's all equal, then those who are, which is nonsense proposition, everyone's not equal. Different people have different levels of intelligence, different levels of sense control, different propensities. If we say that everyone's equal, then that removes the system by which those who are in the lower status can be guided by those on a higher platform. And what happens is because those who are on a higher platform are less in number, then it's the rule of the masses, and the masses are less intelligent. So even those who are more intelligent, and who are supposed to be developing their power of discrimination, they become ruled by the mass desires, the desires of the masses. So that if the masses are not guided by the intelligent, spiritually advanced dominance, then they become simply prone to sense gratification, and then the brahmanas become the servants of the shudras, and they also become prone to sense gratification. The whole society goes down, just like we see in the present time. The intelligent class of people, that intelligence should best be used to understand the purpose of life, they instead engage as engineers or advertising agent consultants. Their intelligence is used to further the end of sense gratification. In other words, the whole society is upside down. They themselves become slaves of the less intelligent people. And the whole society is geared like that. So that the dharma on the material platform, the varnashramham, that system is designed by Krishna, Chaturvanyam Mayashrishtam. Krishna says, I designed this system. But the aim of that system is to place people in society in a position whereby they can interact with others in society and with the modes of material nature in such a way that they may be gradually elevated to the position of one's own real swadharma. Swadharma is on the material platform means to designate someone as brahmachari, grihastha, different divisions, kshatriya, vaishya. But the real swadharma is Jiva, Sudhupai, Krishna, Nitya Das. Everyone is the eternal servant of Krishna. So one is supposed to act within the Varnashram system so that he is physically and mentally, psychologically well situated in human society, so that from that position his mind not being too disturbed, his material necessities being taken care of, there being a stable social system, we can hear about Krishna and serve Krishna, which will bring him beyond the material platform. In the Vishnu Purana, he said that this Varnashram, by performing worship of the dog within the Varnashram system, this is the way to satisfy the Supreme Lord. In the Gita also, Krishna says, Swakarmana Talabhaja Siddhim Vindadhyanavaha. Swakarmana, by performing one's own occupational duties, and simultaneously worshipping the Supreme Lord, everyone can achieve perfection. So when Krishna says, Savat Haman Paritya, what does that mean? Give up all mentally concocted ideas of karma and Mami Kam Sharanam Raja, simply surrender to me. Now how should that be done? And Arjuna at the beginning, he was wanting some solution like that. But let me not fight. Yes, let me give up my kshatriya dharma. Let me do that. I'll simply be your devotee. Let me go to the forest and meditate. And give up this fighting. But Krishna told him that by your nature, your kshatriya nature, you're forced to fight. Even if you go to the forest, you'll fight. Arjuna was already living in the forest for 12 years. And if you see, there are so many fights, even in the forest. The rishis, they go to the forest and they meditate. The Pandavas went to the forest. Their nature is to fight. That is their karma. Again and again they are engaged in different battles, even going to the forest. So Krishna told Arjuna, even if you think you'll give up all your activities, by your very nature you'll be forced to act according to that nature. It's not to be misunderstood that one gives up all activities. He should continue to act according to his material occupational duties, but understanding what his ultimate duty is, which is to surrender to Krishna. Now, for someone who, there are also the Paramahamsas who give up all connection with the Varnashram system, and they live as what is called avadhut. They follow no rules and regulations of the Varnashram system. There are such people, just like, maybe you've heard the name, Bhangshidas Babaji. You've seen that book. He's had practically no connection with the material world. He didn't follow any rules and regulations, even of normal living. So there are such Paramahamsas. But even mostly the Paramahamsas who live in this world, they accept some of the external trappings of the Varnashram system so as to interact with the people of this world to uplift them. In terms, Paramahamsa Sannyasi, Srila Prabhupada, he's Paramahamsa. He doesn't need to accept sannyas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the greatest of all Paramahamsas because he is the ultimate worshipful Hamsa. He is Krishna himself. But he took the position of a sannyasi to teach others. Sannyasi means he's supposed to be the guru of all the Vanyas and Ashrams. So when Krishna says, Savat Haman Paritya, Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja, often people ask, many times people ask me, especially in India, even though I never say such a thing in the class, they say, well, you're telling that we have to give up all our work. And I never say that. But they just presume that I'm saying it, because they think that any sannyasi who speaks about surrendering to Krishna and renouncing we speak about renouncing material desires, they think, well, that means I have to give up my home, my car, my wife, my telephone, my phone. Everything. No, we don't say that. Renouncing material desires and renouncing material possessions and renouncing one's material position is not the same thing. That is a misunderstanding. You see, you may say, I'm renouncing my home, my wife, my children, going to the forest. And then even in the forest, if you have the tendency to become materially attached, you'll become attached to the tree you live under. And if another rishi comes to say, hey, get up, this is my tree. You see? You can be materially attached even in the forest. The tendency is there. But the real Yoga Karma Sukho Shalam, the real art of work, is to become non-attached, even within one's position. How to do that? By becoming attached to Krishna, by offering everything to Krishna. Now, Krishna told Arjuna, you fight, Bhava Nasvara Yudhvija, think of me and think. For my, you do your work for my sake, but karma karma. You work for me, but karma, understanding me to be the supreme. This is the topmost occupation of duty that can go side by side with our material occupation. But it has to be that paradharma. That's the topmost occupational duty is to become completely Krishna conscious. And which can fully satisfy us. That kind of service to Krishna. What kind of service to Krishna? A haitikapati hata. Without any personal motivation. If we go to worship Krishna thinking that I will worship Krishna and Krishna will bless me and I will get lots of money. That will neither please Krishna nor ourselves. Because this material desire, this is a very strange thing. So this material desire, we equate that with happiness, but it's actually the cause of our distress. So in the modern age, it's a very egotistic age, in which, because people have lost the goal of life, which is to understand God in any culture of the world, then naturally people are looking for happiness. It is the nature of the living being to look for happiness. But they don't know spiritual happiness, therefore they become more and more interested in material happiness. And they're promoting sense enjoyment as the goal of life. This whole Dubai city, this whole Sharjah, whatever. So all these places are built up simply on the basis that let us economically develop, and then we can enjoy life. We will be more happy. The people are coming from all over the world to work here, thinking I will be more happy if I get material facilities. In India, the roads are full of holes. Here, they're not full of holes. So I'll be more happy. In India, you see, we don't get so many varieties of food from all over the world. Here we do. So more material facilities. I'll be more happy. The whole society is based on the concept that we will be more happy by having more facilities for material enjoyment. But actually, the opposite is true. Simply by increasing our material desires and attempting to fulfill them, we don't become happy, we actually become more happy. I want more. Let me fulfill my desires. And you're never satisfied with serving others unmotivated, apparently unmotivatedly. They are more happy. You see, there are welfare workers who dedicate their lives to help the poor. Of course, that's a misplaced service. Again, they help them because they're simply producing more karmic reactions by which they'll have to suffer again and again in the future. So really helping the poor or anybody else is to teach them how to get free from all sinful reactions. The poor man is poor, you give him some food and clothing. When he gets some strength, when he goes and performs more sinful reactions, then which you have to suffer more in the future. So really helping others is to give them knowledge of Krishna. The point I was making is that even on the material platform, someone who's very selfish and greedy, he's never satisfied. Whereas someone who's thinking how to help others and serve others, he's more satisfied, more happy. But where that propensity of offering our love to others should be, that should be offered to Krishna, because only Krishna can fully reciprocate. Otherwise, any other love in this material world, we have a family because we want to reciprocate loving feelings and service, but that is temporal. But the loving reciprocation with Krishna, that is eternal. So our motive to serve Krishna, that should be unmotivated, simply for the sake of serving Krishna. And a pratihata going on at every moment. This only can satisfy us. Hare Krishna. Alright, well, we're supposed to finish it. We're going to take questions. The organized system, right? Alright. That is the difference between doing humanity service on the goodness and serving a devotee or guru mission in Krishna consciousness. Well, I just spoke about this briefly. Serving humanity. Actually, how much can you serve humanity? How much can you serve? Is that you want to help the poor? They dedicate their whole life, yes. Then how much can you actually, just like if you want to help the poor, how much can you help the poor? There are thousands of organizations for serving the poor, and still there are millions of poor people. Mother Teresa wanted to serve the poor in Calcutta, but for all her life's work, there's still so many poor people in Calcutta. By karma, people will be poor. So how much can you serve them? Practically not at all. You can serve the poor people, give them prasadam. That way you can give them that food and give them knowledge, get them to chant Hare Krishna. That will be for their ultimate benefit.
That's the deepest care, isn't it? Might take it a little. It's close. I see. All right, I'm watching.
You can't say that, right? Okay, in the present world, how is it decided what is our duty? Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, etc. All are doing service towards mankind. Is it material? Yeah, well, that's what I said. Who is Brahman? Who is Kshatriya? Who is Vaishya? Kalo Shudra Sambhava. In Kali Yuga, everyone's a Shudra because everyone's simply serving. Okay. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya means independent. They have their own financial independence. Brahmana, you should never accept service to others because people are born in Brahmin families and they're very proud. I'm a Brahmin. But if your livelihood is by serving others, then that, in Bhagavatam, Narad Muni is described in the different Varnas and Ashrams. Now you're going to say it's this nasty, heavy Bhakti caste Varna thing, but I'm only stating what is in Shastra. So Narad Muni describes that a Brahmana, in a time of emergent, you should always remain independent, if necessary, just by picking up grains from that have fallen down in the field. Not stealing grains from anyone's field, but you can pick up some that have already fallen on the ground, and in this way subsist if necessary. But if in emergency he may take the role of a kshatriya, or even the role of a vaishya, but he should never accept svavriti, means the profession of a dog, means becoming servant of someone. So in this age, everyone is acting as a shudra. So how we decide to decide these words? Society is chaotic. Better serve Krishna. And if you serve Krishna, then you become automatically a brahmana in the truest sense. Because brahmana means who knows what is Brahman, what is the absolute truth. Brahma jana bhiti brahmana. So in that way you become a Brahmana. Okay, let's... I am a masseuse by profession. Is that how it's pronounced? It's a French word, came into English. So in French it's probably pronounced differently. Do I get other people's karma in the process? Is it transferred to the guru and initiated? Everything we do in this world, we're interacting with others. There's definitely interaction of karma. If you associate with sinful people, then suddenly you become involved in their sinful reaction. But if you become Krishna conscious, then as much as we are surrendered to Krishna, we are free from those sinful reactions. Now, it's also recommended or enjoined for those who are earning money to offer money for the cause of Krishna consciousness. If you take all the money and simply use it for yourself, then along with you're eating the money and you're eating the karma also. So offer to Krishna. That way you get free from simple reactions. Is it transferred to guru? Unless we actually perform simple activities, and simple activities will affect that effects on the guru. Therefore don't commit simple activities. But also everything of, see, what is the relationship between guru and disciple? Thinking how to uplift. The guru is always thinking how to uplift and benefit the disciple. So definitely the consciousness of the disciple will affect the guru. He'll be very pleased if he sees the disciple becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness. But if he sees that even after so many years he's still attached to mundane things, then naturally he won't be very satisfied with us. Let's put them in order.
There's other ways. Is Krishna an incarnation of Vishnu or Vishnu an incarnation of Krishna? Now, in some of the Puranas, such as the Vishnu Purana, it seems that Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu. Even in the Bhagavad Purana, that is stated. But then again, it is said that Krishna is still Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the original source of all incarnations. And Lord Brahma, who is born from Narayana, he himself states in his prayers too, that appears in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. He states that actually you are the original source of Narayana. So according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the topmost Vedic literature, Vishnu is coming from Krishna, but at the same time they're all the same. They're different forms of the same person, but still the original form, Govindam Adi Purusham, is Krishna. But on the other hand, if we say that Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu, that's also not untrue, because they're non-different, and when Krishna appears in this material world, he appears through the agency of the Purushavatar, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Shiradaksha Vishnu. So both things are true, but if we want to get to the heart of the matter, the original form of Godhead is Krishna. This is not actually something we need to argue about very much. If people are attached to worshipping Lakshmi Narayana, that's very nice. We're not going to argue with them. Why does the heart cause confusion and mind clarity? A human being has to line with both, to combine both successfully. This is a very interesting question. Now, according to modern psychologists and neurologists, there are two sides to the brain. One side deals more with analytical and logical matters, and the other side deals more with emotion. Now, emotional side, that tends to be more active and more dominant in women than in men, and even when the analytical side is going on for them, at the same time the emotional side is very strong also. That's why in the Shastra sometimes it is stated that women are less intelligent. Why is that stated? We sometimes see that women are managing companies and even organizing the household can be as big a management job as managing an office. So why is it said less intelligent? Because that tendency is there is to be more emotional. Therefore, what are the functions of intelligence? Memory, ability to absorb information, ability to understand it. That's called Brahma Shakti. And Dharana Shakti means memory, ability to remember. Then there's also the power of discrimination, which is the most important thing. As you may remember, you may pick up so much information and analyze so much information, but if you can't discriminate how to act according to that information, then that is less intelligent. So for that reason, women are supposed to be under the protection of men who are supposed to be trained in Vedic knowledge so they know how to discriminate. Although in the modern age, we find that also men are not trained and they're complete. Because they're driven by sense gratification, they also have no power of discrimination. So therefore, any Vaishnavi, any devotee in a woman's body, is just by the fact of being devotee, is immediately far more intelligent than any non-devotee man, because she's come to Krishna. Now, why does the heart cause confusion and the mind clarity? Well, the mind gives clarity if the mind is being trained in the Vedic knowledge. Otherwise, it doesn't give clarity. Otherwise, there's just simply more confusion. So both things are there. That is the very nature of the soul. The nature of the soul is consciousness. Consciousness works in different ways, by analytic intelligence and by feeling. So both things are there. We have, just like for instance in Bhagavatam, there's analytic, Krishna in Bhagavatam is giving analytical information of the material world, analytical information of the philosophy. But then, the ultimate purpose of Bhagavatam is that it's Rasa Shastra. Rasa means beyond all analytical intelligence and understanding, we are simply on the pure platform of loving feelings for Krishna. So both things are there. Krishna is also speaking Bhagavad Gita, and he's also dancing with the gopis. He's speaking Bhagavad Gita, logically explaining to Krishna, to Arjuna, at the same time he's saying, Bhaktosime Sakacheti, you are my devotee, you are my friend, I love you. In the Bhagavatam, we'll also find Uddhava Gita, in which Krishna is explaining very analytically to Uddhava all the nature of the spiritual science, what is the process of yoga, process of sankhya, all these different things. But then in the middle of that, he there's one very nice verse. He says to Uddhava, Natatame Priyatana, Atmayone na Shankara, Atmayone, Nacha Sankarshana na Shri, Naivatma Chayata Tada. He says that, my dear Uddhava, even compared to Brahma, who is born from my very own body, even compared to Shankar, Lord Shiva, even compared to my brother Balaram, even compared to Lakshmi, or even compared to my own self, I love you more. So in the middle of so much analysis, he's also expressing his loving feeling. So that's there in God himself. So naturally it's in us also. Our highest goal is to go beyond all. And you see, Mother Yashoda, she doesn't analytically think. Is this God? No, it's my boy. One time she was, Balaram, all the coward boys complained that Krishna's eating dirt. You see? He said, why? And I'm feeding him sandesh and nice food and ghee and all these things. And why is he eating dirt? And Krishna said, no, it's not true. They're simply making a plot against me to defame me, slandering me. So Mother Yashoda took Krishna on her lap, said, okay, open your mouth, now we'll see. So in Krishna's mouth she saw all the planets and all the universes and all the devas worshipping Krishna, and she also saw herself with Krishna on her lap. So then she started thinking, oh, actually Krishna's the Supreme Lord, and I'm in Maya, thinking I'm the wife of Nanda Maharaj and the queen of Vrindavan and Krishna is my son. She's having all these philosophical thoughts, and all of a sudden Krishna thought that, wait a minute, now my mother's going to start thinking I'm God. So he started crying, I want to drink the milk from your breast. And immediately Mother Yashoda forgot. So Krishna's crying, he wants the milk from my breast. Her loving feelings completely overcame her analytical intelligence, and she completely forgot. Another story there's there, Jagannath Mishra, the father of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was always correcting his son, because just like Krishna is a very naughty boy, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, very naughty boy. So in a dream one night, one deva came and said, look, you can't chastise him. You should stop this. He's gone. So he said, well, he might be God, but he's my son and it's my duty to teach him. So, you know, he may be a god, he may be whatever he is, I have to teach him. So even though there may have been some knowledge of his exalted, the analytical understanding of his exalted position, the feelings, the rasa, the loving feelings for the topmost devotees, they completely overwhelm them. So even if someone says Krishna is God, he said, all right, and, you know, he's my friend, let's come play with him. The residents of Vrindavan, they also know that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, even the gopis. What is that verse? That, what is that? Apalu gopika nandana bhavan. Everyone has a particular type of nature. How will Krishna consciousness change my nature? On the material platform, everyone has a particular kind of nature inherited from his previous actions on the material platform. So everyone has a particular type of nature, but that nature, that's what is our real nature? Our real nature is to be the servant of Krishna. So Krishna consciousness doesn't change our inherent nature, it brings out our inherent nature. At the moment we're thinking my nature is to be a man or a woman, and I like this and I like that. But that is only, our nature is always changing. At the present time we may have a nature, I'm like this, and then I have a bit of an angry nature and a bit of a jolly nature also. But then in the next life you become a dog and you get a different, you get dog nature.
Even some dogs, one dog is more angry and one dog is more friendly. So that is always changing. But what is our real nature to love Krishna? Krishna consciousness brings out our true nature. Pure devotee of Krishna has all good qualities. So Krishna consciousness brings that out. I want to see the form of Krishna during my lifetime. Is it possible? By just the chanting Hare Krishna in an unalloyed manner, continuously. Well, that's my only desire. That's a very nice desire. Yes, certainly. Now, but many times say, you chant Hare Krishna, you can see Krishna face to face in this very lifetime. Our several-headed Brahmas, our universe is with four-headed, whereas other multi-headed Brahmas arise from which Vishnus? Vishnu is one, but he takes many forms in each universe. There are millions of universes, and in each universe is Karan Dakshay Vishnu, Radha Dakshay Vishnu, Shiva Dakshay Vishnu. So the many-headed Brahmas, they are just like in this universe, the four-headed Brahma is born from Radha Dakshay Vishnu. So in other universes, many-headed Brahmas are born from another manifestation of the same Radha Dakshay Vishnu. That's all.
Yes.
We go back to the spiritual world, how can we assure that we don't fall down again? Well, that's up to us. We have independence. We have the possibility to use or misuse it.
But as you go to the spiritual
world, that's true. No, the possibility is there to come. Generally, no one will. Why should you? Why should you come here in the first place? But if you say you'd never come back, then that means some independence is there. Always you have the independent nature. Not independent, we don't have that minute independence, and there's no question of love. Just like you see during the Mao Zedong, during his regime, everyone had to offer their salams to him. But that was by force. You find in democratic countries, you can say all things against the rulers, against Tony Blair or Bill Clinton, but if you go to Saudi Arabia, and if you say anything against the ruler, then you'll be in. If you're lucky, you might keep your head. And there's no independence to think whether you're just forced to love the king, love the sheep. So that's by force. That doesn't mean that in your heart, you love it. Just like now in the newspaper, there's Suharto in Indonesia. By force, you get them and everyone under control, but actually they hate it. Now they're breaking out of it. And the same thing, Krishna doesn't force us. You must love him. But he's naturally lovable. So it's natural that our love will flow towards Krishna. Unless we are deliberately trying to be a complete rascal, then we'll never come back again. But then you won't even get in there if you're trying to be a rascal.